It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's been a little over 4 months since Bill Peduto was sworn in as the mayor of Pittsburgh, and he's been a busy man over the last 120 days or so as he continues the process of hiring staff, dealing with a budget crunch, and doing a fair amount of traveling. Today, he makes his monthly visit to Essential Pittsburgh for a conversation in Studio A. Mayor Peduto, welcome back to the program. Your timing is impeccable. How are you?
I'm doing well, still having a little bit of an emotional hangover from last night.
Referring to the Penguins. But we have breaking news.
Yeah.
Your office has just announced that you have named FBI Special Agent Stephen Bukar, I believe is the way the name is pronounced, as the new public safety director. Is this in keeping with your desire to bring in, as you put it, an Elliot Ness type, an untouchable, if you will?
Yeah. Agent Bukar presently serves in D.C. as the chief of the FBI's counterterrorism division. And what he has done and what he does nationally, we will have an ability to do on a local level. And that is preparedness, resiliency, and the ability to modernize operations for any type of unforeseen circumstance. So in one half, you want to have somebody who has this ability to do triage. He headed counterterrorism in New York City, which was the largest counterterrorism within the United States, the largest unit, and then at a national level as well. But he's not only a federal law enforcement expert, he's also a former state trooper, Pennsylvania state trooper, which comes with its own training, which comes with its own discipline. And even before that, served as a police officer in West Brownsville. And so he has an understanding where we have the most critical need, which is in law enforcement within our public safety bureaus, of how to do it right. But he also has an ability to understand how you need to coordinate between all agencies with his work in counterterrorism, even beyond the city. So it's not just somebody that understands police, fire, EMS, and building inspection, but somebody that understands how a city needs to work with the state and federal authorities and county authorities in that situation that will occur, which will be the darkest day in the city, where I will have to stand with 7 TV cameras pointed at me, and I need to know that that person standing to my right has every bit amount of the experience and knowledge needed in order to help the city to get through it. Now, that is half of it. The other half of it is addressing what has been very present these past several years, which is a culture that has eroded the trust within the community and the trust within the ranks of not only the police bureau, but within the public safety bureaus, EMS, fire, and even to some degree within building inspection, and has eroded so far that it is now a culture that is permeates throughout city government. So I also need, and that's where this Elliot Ness character comes into, somebody that can help to change that by their own integrity and their own ability to show that they can lead by example. And it's not a knock against the 3 other candidates who all made it to that final round because they all carried that same trait.
Including the previous public safety
including
director, Mike Huss.
Yeah, Mike Huss, who's done a great job. And I can tell you this, and I told him that in January he was not on my list. But because of the work that I watched him do these past several months, he worked his way up to being a finalist for the job. And it was a very, very difficult decision to make that change. But what Bukar gives us is an opportunity to start new and also those two different parts of it. We have a lot of work to do to clean up city government, and it starts at the top. By the way, when I used the Elliot Ness comparison back during the campaign, I wasn't aware that Elliot Ness was actually the public safety director of Cleveland and as such brought in innovation and change within the Cleveland Public Safety Department of things that we still use presently all over the world.
And that reference to Untouchable, of course, it goes back to the book actually that Elliot Ness co-wrote and then the TV show and the movie starring Robert De Niro and Kevin Costner. But that reference refers to the idea that someone is uncorruptible. What is it about Stephen Bukar that indicates to you, even with all of the credentials that you outlined, that he is in fact someone who won't end up, say, for example, like Nate Harper.
Yeah. So when we did Talent City, we didn't only just ask people to go to a website and send in a resume. There were different things that were a part of it, including the interview process and a very in-depth research on the individual, then on the research behind the people who were doing the recommendations, and then even not quite psychological profiling, but questions that would allow you to see whether or not these candidates' traits match up to the profile that what you're looking for with the job description, all using local companies, by the way. And so through that process and the paper process, he was able to succeed with it. On top of that, the interview process that first started through Talent City with a group of public safety experts who then narrowed down the candidates, and then we narrowed down past that. My group for the interview was Kevin Ackland, my chief of staff, somebody who I rely heavily on all decision-making, and my brother David, who is a psychologist who does psychological profiling for Special Forces and Rangers. And having those two people looking at the different components along with me and looking what I'm looking for, plus the fact that the clearance that Special Agent Bukhar has had to reach in order to have the position that he has goes way beyond any of the things that we even did. The FBI clearances and the special clearances for top secret obviously require a much higher level as well. All of those things combined assure me that we have the right candidate.
So where does this leave the timetable for finding a new police chief?
It's still the same that we said during the campaign. And the campaign, it was always the police chief would be the last position we'd hire because it would take the most due diligence. And we're still looking, you know, I said at that time it would be somewhere around 9 months. I'd like to be able to open up the process to applications next week. But at the same time, I want to have what I promised, which is neighborhood conversations about what the people are looking for in their police chief. And I'd like to use it through our public safety zone councils, which we have six throughout the city. And once Special Agent Bukhar comes on board, then I think we can have him present. And that should be in the beginning of June. And having those meetings basically from June through the beginning of July, having the same process that we use through Talent City, accepting those applications from all across the country. And by the way, when we received applications for Talent City, they actually came from all across the world. We actually had people as far away as Abu Dhabi applying for positions to work in the city of Pittsburgh's government.
That would have been an interesting hire.
It was very interesting. And in fact, the reason was is that back in the 90s, this person who was doing urban planning in Abu Dhabi had received their master's degree in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
And they were very interested to return back to the States, and they loved Pittsburgh and always had this dream of returning to Pittsburgh. But anyways, despite that, we will follow that same process with police chief and run two tracks, finding the best person who is most qualified while at the same time getting community input, because we have a lot of healing to do between the police bureau and our communities.
So we are looking at, if I understand your timetable correctly, we are looking at July or August by the time we may be ready to announce a new police chief in Pittsburgh?
Again, same with the public safety director. I'm not going to hold it to a time frame, but to a process. And as long as we can get through an open application process that gets the best talent from around the country, have Talent City process that is able to evaluate that, and a community process where people feel that they have a voice in this selection, then we'll be able to pick the best candidate for this absolutely critical position. So, you know, I would say that we're in May right now, and if we spend our summertime doing this, we should be able to do it right and have somebody in place by Labor Day.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Our guest is Mayor Bill Peduto. He's making his monthly visit here on the program. I'm sure that you wish there were sunnier topics to discuss than the budget crunch, but the fact is that it looks like tough times for the city when it comes to the budget. You addressed this yesterday. Describe the problem the city is facing and how you plan to deal with it.
Well, it's twofold. It's a structural deficit that we knew existed that had been basically covered over for a number of years. And then on top of it, it's the inability or basically the city's resistance to addressing our capital needs and our pension obligation. So on the structural deficit side, on the operating budget side, we're facing a $12 million hole this year that doesn't go away, but increases to up to $35 million by the next 5 years. And if we don't address that, it doesn't disappear. It just gets larger. So we have to be able to address it head on. We can't hide it. We can't pretend to not fill positions within the budget or to use revenues that don't exist and haven't existed since 2006 and put them in as placeholders. We have to have a real budget. So what's different is that this administration has opened up all of our books, given all of the information to Act 47 and the ICA, and said, we'll work with you in order to be able to solve this problem. There is a problem. It is real. There is a solution. It's going to take some time, and also it's not going to be easy, but it's solvable, and we'll work to solve that. But if we just do that, then you'll never see your street repaved. The rec center down the street will be closed because we'll never have fixed the leaking roof, and the roof will fall in. Our urban forest will decay, and our parks, our rec centers, and other assets, our public assets, will basically be at a position where we'll lose them because we spend about half of what we need to spend on an annual basis on our capital, on our long-term, on our bridges and our roads, and we have no structure in place for a 5 or 10 year plan. So we have to create that too. But if we only do those two things, the city will still be in financial dire straits because we haven't addressed our pension obligation. And part of the solution is in Harrisburg, but you can't just push it off to Harrisburg and say, solve it for us. It has to be done. We have to roll up our own sleeves and finally tackle it. And we can't just borrow money and throw it in there and then assume that that's a solution, because that's exactly the problem and the way that got us into the situation to begin with. Borrowing too much, not addressing the issue.
So the question then becomes, how do you address these budget shortfalls? And I'm going to leave it hanging there for a moment because we are up to a break. We'll take this break and come back and talk about that and more about the Act 47 oversight situation with Pittsburgh. We are talking with Mayor Bill Peduto. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Stay with us. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're with Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. He's making his monthly visit to the program, and we are hitting a number of topics, including the fact that today, in case you missed it, the mayor announced that the city has named FBI Special Agent Stephen Bukar as the new Public Safety Director. And we are also talking about the budget situation that and the budget shortfall that the city is addressing. That's where we left off before we took the break, Mayor Peduto. Yeah. And so let's pick up there with, how do you address this this incredible shortfall and the Act 47 oversight that you are also dealing with?
So just quickly on the process of it, under the plan, usually the mayor doesn't address council until after the plan has been presented by the Act 47 coordinators. But the council was asking, they're like, hey, look, we don't have much time. Realize the governor made that decision late. It's really shortened the window. Give us an update of where we stand so that we can be prepared. So that's why what we did is we didn't provide a solution. We provided the background by which the solution is being formed. So the Act 47 coordinators held a public hearing last night. Very lightly attended, and I don't think it's because of the Penguin game. I really do think it's more because we've been through this, you know, three times, and people basically feel, well, I've already talked and said my piece.
They're tuning out.
So we now are at the phase where they have to make that recommendation and the solution and give it to council by the end of the month. They're not required by the end of the month, but to give council the due diligence to hold public hearings, to be able to really get their up to their elbows in this, to offer modifications, they should be given that amount of time. So what the only directive that we've been giving to the coordinators, and what they've been asking us for is information, is there are no sacred cows. In the past, there have been departments that administrations have said, don't touch this, don't touch them. There are no issues on revenue that won't at least be looked at. My last thing I want to do is raise any of the existing taxes that we already have, property, wage, real estate transfer, or parking tax. And the reason being, our property tax is one of the higher – we're in the higher threshold in the county. Our wage tax is the third highest in the state. Our real estate transfer tax is the highest in the state, and our parking tax is the highest in the country. We've maxed out those lines. So those are the ones that the state gives us the power to raise. Ask them to, you know, look at other areas where we have the ability to raise revenue, and at the same time address expenditures and opportunities to lower costs across the board. One of the big areas that we also are looking at, and we've had numerous conversations this year, are nonprofits. The city no longer has a for-profit economy. The driving force of the city's economy, not the county's economy, not the region's economy, the city's economy is our nonprofits, but they pay no taxes to the city. So in other words, the major employers pay nothing, which means the smaller employers are forced to pay more, and those that live in the city are forced to take on the heaviest burden. And that's just not fair. So, you know, in the past years, in the past administration, $2 million a year, $3 million a year for 2 or 3 years has been what they have been accepting. We can't accept that. We have got to have a plan that addresses at least 10 years and a significant contribution from our major nonprofits, the major employers.
Such as?
UPMC, Highmark Allegheny West Penn, University of Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University. Those four provide about 80% of the nonprofit payroll in the city of Pittsburgh. Just those four.
So you're saying they need to step up?
Well, they need to step up, and we need to have basically an agreement, much like we created the agreement with the Pittsburgh Promise, that there will be a commitment from the major nonprofits to be able to pay a certain amount of money over a set course of years with a sunset, and that those funds would be used not to pad our operating budget, but to address those legacy costs of our pension and our capital needs so that the city in the next 10 years won't just get out of Act 47 on a stretcher, but will have a very strong financial future for the next 20 years.
In the meantime, how are you determining your priorities? For example, you say that you want to hire more police officers, which is certainly understandable, but how do you spread that around judiciously? If you're hiring more police officers, then presumably you're going to be making cuts elsewhere. And it's understandable why you'd want to have more police officers, but someone would ask, should it be done at the expense of other priorities?
Yeah. So quite honestly, we do it line by line, job by job. And we go department by department. And the same way that we put together our budget for this year that cut $500,000 out of the Ravenstall budget over employee positions and restructured salaries, including lowering my own salary, we're doing the same thing right now with the Act 47 team. The goal of having 900 police officers is not something that we created. That was the goal in 2004. The unfortunate part about it is the previous administration never made it a priority. Instead, what they did is they used that as a way to pad the hole in the budget. So when you hire 825 officers, when the budget has been budgeted for 900, those 75 positions that aren't filled are able to fill that structural deficit in a way that really isn't the best way to do it. But at the same time, it's what I call the smoke and mirror effect of trying to balance a budget. What we're trying to do is council budgets 900 officers. We hire 900 officers. And I can tell you this, that at the end of last week, I gave the order to Public Safety Director Mike Huss, our present Public Safety Director, to begin that next class of officers so that we're at 900 by the end of the year.
The union representing Pittsburgh firefighters suggests you are posturing as the city heads into negotiations with the union and the police union this year. What is your response to that?
It's unfortunate. I would say that the posturing occurred in the past 2 years when the union, along with the previous administration, tried to lobby to get the city out of Act 47 so that they could have no constraints on a new contract, even though they both knew, the previous administration had to know that our financial condition, it would have crippled us. And for political reasons, you know, the union then endorsed the mayor then endorsed the plan for Act 47, and they had this really convenient relationship You know, that was doing the budgeting through the lens of politics and not through the lens of reality. Act 47, once we released the documents and we showed them exactly where the financial situation was, agreed 100%. The Secretary of the Department of Community and Economic Development, the governor, could not let us out of Act 47 because they realized we have a structural deficit that's real and they had to take action, but it had to wait until we got in office so we could release the documents. You know, this has been the veil that has been over the city of Pittsburgh. This some are more powerful than others, and for those there are special favors. We're stripping that away. And, you know, I will make sure that firefighters have a good contract, that they have a good salary, that they're protected and that they're able to go home at night to their family and that they can retire with a pension. But the special privilege that that some have expected over the years that have crippled the city financially, those days are gone. They are gone.
We're talking with Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto during our monthly segment with him, and we have a few minutes left to discuss big dreams here. You've had a chance to do some traveling. You were in Germany last week, and you were looking for commonalities on major issues around sustainability and technology. What did you find there? What are the components of sustainability, technology, and innovation we need to add here based on what you saw in Germany?
First, I just want to make a very, very immediate point. There's no cost to the taxpayers when I do this, because the immediate thing on Twitter is, you know, oh, junk it, or taxpayers are paying for it. And
CMU funded your trip.
Carnegie Mellon University, Professor Volker Harkoff, who is an international expert and architect on building design and sustainability, along with the head of the Green Building Alliance, Mike Milhock, who is a consultant and a tech executive, and the former CEO of Fisher Scientific, who's now the CEO of the Energy Innovation Center, Bill Recker. The five of us went, and we met with leading corporate and academic and government and research people on how Germany has been transforming itself for decades around sustainability. So when we went, we looked at cogeneration plants that were doing small-scale development to an entire community of over 600 houses, all being generated. So the heat and the electricity for this entire neighborhood isn't connected to a big powered grid system and a big power plant. It's being done with wood chips, the entire community with wood chips, and not even wood that's being harvested, but the stuff that is laying on the ground and other types of when the public works crews trim trees, and all the waste wood is providing an entire community with all the electricity and heat that it needs. We met with companies that create windows that, if it's negative 10 degrees outside and you touch the window from the inside, it's warm. Three panes of glass with argon in between that now, because of technology, the cost of producing is around 10% higher than a standard window. We met with companies and groups that have created buildings and entire neighborhoods that produce more energy than they use. And when I meet with these people and I see that it exists and that it has existed since 1994, I then think about, why are we developing the Hill without those same types of things with the Penguin development? Why aren't we creating cogeneration in Hazelwood and creating not even net zero but net plus housing, where people can live in a smaller type of a footprint and they have no energy costs, and hopefully Pennsylvania will change its ways and be able to sell energy back into the grid? Why aren't we looking at the entire development along the Allegheny River from the convention center all the way to the Highland Park Bridge and create a model system that then people will want to travel to Pittsburgh to see what we're doing? And this is all reality. This isn't George Jetson. This is happening around the world. It's happening in continents all across the world. I'm going to take every advantage that I can when there's an opportunity, not only to be the ambassador / salesman, that's what I call myself, but the person who's going to learn and to bring back the opportunity to Pittsburgh when it's being paid for by somebody else. I'll be very prudent when it's not. And in those times, it will be more for the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the National League of Cities, Pennsylvania League of Municipalities, where we're a member and where we're working to increase our stature. But I just, you know, it, it pains me when people, like, you know, you talk about financial distress and yet you go on these trips. I would never waste people's money.
You also said recently it's time to develop the land area where the Civic Arena once stood, and you mentioned that lower hill area. How do you intend to do that?
Well, we failed twice in getting federal grants because of a plan that really didn't incorporate the community in it. And you can say, well, yes, it did. A couple of the elected representatives were in part of it, but it didn't. What it did is it developed the 28 acres, and even the secretary in Washington said when we did our last Tiger Grant, Secretary of Transportation, it lacks the ladders of opportunity. In other words, the last application may have been great and had nice tree grates and new decorative lighting on the 28 acres that the Penguins control, but across the street as you go into uptown and in the hill, there was nothing. So we expanded the footprint, and we made it so that it now includes the neighborhood as part of the ask. We increased the amount to do so, but we did so understanding that that then becomes a gateway for future development. We have included the plans for the BRT, and the county executive has dedicated funds in order to start the planning process for this. So now we include more of the hill and more of uptown. So it's not just a development for the Penguins and their site, but it's a way to leverage that to get more. And if we could do a cogeneration plant there, if we could create a way, even using natural gas, which would be an easy way to do it, and that would be able to provide the electricity and the heat for that site, we could partner in the city and the county. And then we may even have the opportunity to start to expand in the Middle Hill and offer discounted utilities to the folks that live in the community and use that as an incentive to get more people to move in and start to rebuild the housing stock of the Hill District house by providing incentive on utility costs.
And as we wrap up this segment, I know that just as you lament the loss of the igloo, you were someone who fought the demolition of that. I'm sure, and you're still showing off the playoff beard today, yeah, as sitting across from me. I'm sure you lament the loss of the Penguins. The city is having a tough day today. How are you taking it?
Try to be brief about this. 1975, the Pens lost to the New York Islanders. I sat in my room listening on a radio, and I cried. Last night, I didn't cry. I was angry. There is no reason that this team should have lost three in a row to that team. The Penguins had the talent. They just lacked the heart. And the Rangers out-hustled us. They outplayed us. They out-coached us. And good luck to them in the next series.
Mayor Bill Petutto making his monthly visit to our Central Pittsburgh studios. Mayor, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
appreciate
Paul.
It.
Thank you.
Coming up, we will take you to the banks of the Allegheny for an alluring song by a local a cappella group. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.